are listening to the Sermon Podcast from Real Life on the Palouse, reaching the world for Jesus, one person at a time.
Before we get started, I have to give a disclaimer. This is going to be PG-13 today. So if you have young ones that you're concerned about, now is a great time to take them out. Our children's program is excellent and they will enjoy it in there. But it's just a warning. Just it's PG-13. It's not going to be crazy, but it is there. We are going to get into some stuff today. When I was 8 years old, my house was almost blown away in a hurricane. I was living in Florida at the time, and my mom and dad came to me and they were like, "Ben, a hurricane is coming. We have to get ready." And I was like, "Okay." I don't know what that meant. I was 8 years old. Like, I've never been in a hurricane. So they started to tell me, like, there could be 150 mile an hour winds. There's going to be rain. There could be flooding. I was like, "Okay. What do we do?" And they said, "Well, we're gonna put duct tape on the windows so that if they break, they won't shatter and fly everywhere. Like, we're gonna fill the bathtub up with water so that we have clean water if we need it. We're gonna go get canned goods and all this stuff." And I was like, "Okay." Right? I was getting nervous more and more the more they're talking about this hurricane. I was pretty stressed. But then the Cunies came down, and my life is always better when they're in it. Our friends and neighbors that lived right down the street, they come down, and we start doing everything, and I notice something. Everyone seems to be acting different than me. They're laughing and putting duct tape, like, and I was like, "What are you guys doing? Like, shouldn't we be scared? Shouldn't we be worried about this?" And I think what they were trying to show me was, look, we can't control the storm. A storm is going to do what the storm does. We are going to be prepared as we can be, but the rest isn't really up to us. And I think we are going to introduce a storm today in the text, and it's coming, and it's going to hit. And Jesus is going to tell them to be prepared, but not to freak out. Now, that night, I went to sleep. I get up the next morning, and I come running out because I wanted to see what the hurricane had done. Right? And I found out the only thing it did was change course and miss us completely. And I'm going to be honest, I was a little sad because I couldn't wait to tell people I survived a hurricane and then I didn't. So it was a little bit of a thing like this didn't happen, but we were prepared. Now today in our text, the storm is coming and it is going to happen and we need to get prepared. Okay, we have 35 verses today in chapter 24 of Matthew that we're going to cover. And I'd like to say thanks for choosing me, but I volunteered for this, so it's my own fault. So we've got a long way to go. We're not going to hit it verse by verse. It would just take too much. Also, I don't want to get confused with the details from the main point. I want to stay with what Jesus is talking about. Okay, so we're going to go through that today. I want to remind us where we are. All of chapter 23 was basically Jesus hammering the Pharisees and the teachers of the law about how they were not in relationship with God and how they were bringing other people or keeping other people from coming to him. He is not nice. I mean, he's still nice, but he's not nice to them in a way like he is pushing them and pushing them. He calls them children of the devil. But that's not the way chapter 23 ends. Chapter 23 ends like this. It says, "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who kill the prophets and stone those sent to you. How often I have longed to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you would not listen. Look, your house is left to you desolate. For you will not see me again until you say, 'Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord.'" It starts with him warning them about all the things that they're doing that are keeping them from the relationship. But at the end, you see Jesus' heart. He weeps over Jerusalem and says, "I wanted to gather you as my children, but you won't listen." And I think Jesus knows what's coming. Rome is probably the most brutal empire in the history of the world. And the Jews and the Roman army are on a collision course. Doesn't take a brilliant person to figure out what's going to happen there. I do think Jesus is brilliant. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But I don't think it takes that. Like, Jesus can see what's coming because they wanted a conquering king to drive out Rome, and they got a suffering servant who offered them freedom, and they don't take it. And Jesus weeps over Jerusalem. All right, let's go to our text for today, starting in Matthew 24, and we're going to see kind of the response of the disciples. Jesus left the temple and was walking away when his disciples came to him. When his disciples came to him to draw his attention to its buildings. "Do you see all these things?" he said. "Truly, I tell you, not one stone here will be left upon another. Every one will be thrown down." As Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately. "Tell us," they said, "when will this happen? And what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?" Okay, I want to pause here for a second and discuss what's happening. The disciples see Jesus weeping over Jerusalem. They see him, you know, and they think, "Jesus, what are you talking about? Look at these buildings. Look at this." And Jesus says, "You think this is awesome? It's all coming down. All of it. Don't get too excited about these things that you've built. It's coming down." And so the disciples have three questions. When is this going to happen? What will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? Now, if you've looked at your Bible, there's probably a heading that says the end of days or whatever, you know, end times. Like, a lot of people come at it from that perspective. But I am going to look at it differently today because I think Jesus is speaking to people in his time. Maybe he has us in mind in the future, but the disciples are asking specific questions and he's answering them for them. And so we're going to look at what that would mean for them. And we'll leave the wrestling with what's going to happen at the end for somebody smarter than me, okay? Okay, I want to look at some pictures because these are kids from like Genesee and Troy, okay? The disciples are from Galilee. It's pretty remote. Most of them come from a town of a few hundred people. And then they come to Jerusalem and the temple is there. And even if they've been there before, which they probably have, it's impressive. Right, this is God's house, God's city. And I'm going to tell you something. You would be impressed if you saw it today. Okay, we're going to put some pictures up. This is from the southwest corner of the Temple Mount. And you can see the stones. You can see Robinson's Arch over here on the left part of it coming out. Like, at one point, it was just rubble everywhere because all the stones did come down. But the stones, many of the ones at the bottom, they're so well packed, you can't slide paper in between them. And most of them are not cracked, which whenever you put stones and you lay them, I don't know how many of you have done stonework. When we lived in San Antonio, we had a yard and all we grew was stones, it felt like. Like, we would go out and I would water them and the dirt would just move away and then I'd have this new rock. So I started building a wall. It was 3 feet by 3 feet and it ran like for 200 and something feet by the end, by the time we sold, because I just kept getting more rocks and I would just keep stacking them. If you don't stack them well, the ones on the bottom will crack. If there's dust, sand grains in there, they can crack them. Or they just tumble all apart and then you have to rebuild the wall, right? These, you can see, a lot of them don't have cracks. And you can't fit paper between. Like, they are so well milled. There's even a stone in the bottom that I think is something like 15 feet by 15 feet by 45 feet, weighs close to 600 tons. Like, this is impressive. Okay, now, I want to keep going. This, there's Robinson's Arch with what it actually would have looked like. This is a replica at the Shrine of the Book. This is from that same corner. The western wall is about, 70 feet off the ground at this point in history, you know, now versus when it was. But you can see what it kind of looked like, and you can see the temple up in the upper right-hand corner in the back, okay, the actual temple. All right, let's go to the picture of the temple. Here we go. Okay, so this is a model of the temple. The temple has been destroyed, just like Jesus said it would be. You see the white marble on it. Okay, it's impressive. Let me tell you something. This one, I think, is on a scale of 120 feet, but it's actually too short. If you cut that one in half and stacked it on top of it, that's closer to the thing, because we know it was between 100 and 120 cubits tall, somewhere between 150 feet and 200. To give you an example, the Kibbe Dome is 150 feet high. So I'm going to guess that the temple was actually about 30 feet taller than the Kibbe Dome. Covered in white marble and then with gold overlay. So when the sun hit it, it was actually kind of hard to look at. It would bounce off and it was so bright. Right? And so the disciple, it's impressive even though this part isn't even there. And they're impressed by it. They're like, Jesus, how can you say this? Like, look at all these things. Look at this building. Look at everything that's here. And Jesus says, it's all coming down. And they want to know, like we do, when? We're going to work on answering two of the three questions today, and we're going to save one for next Sunday. Okay? So bear with me. All right, let's go back to our text. Jesus answered, "Watch out that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name, claiming I am the Messiah, and will deceive many. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these are the beginning of birth pains." And we're going to step out again. Jesus is trying to tell them. They want to know, when is this going to happen? And he's like, look, a lot of stuff is going to happen. Wars, kingdoms, famines, earthquakes. It's only the beginning. When my daughter was born, my oldest daughter was born. Well, first, when my son was born first, 5 weeks before his due date, my wife and I went to the San Antonio airport to pick up my mother. She was flying into town for the weekend. We get to there, we're sitting in the cell phone waiting lot, and I hear, uh-oh. And I go, what? And she goes, I think my water broke. And I was like, what do you mean you think? She goes, well, I might have peed. And I was like, how do you not know? And she's like, well, I haven't done this before. And I was like, you know, that's fair. Men, don't ask dumb questions. Just listen and be helpful. So we're waiting on my mom, and I'm like calling her over and over. Finally, she goes, okay, I'm here. And she starts to tell me her story. I'm like, Mom, get your stuff and let's go. Brooke's water broke. And I hung up because I had to drive from the cell phone waiting lot over to get her. So I'm driving over, and my dad calls back, and he's like, Ben, that's not funny. You can't tease her. I said, Dad, I'm not teasing. Like, I need her to get her stuff, and come on, we have got to go to the hospital. I've never been to dad before. I'm terrified. We go to the hospital. About 14 hours later, we have this tiny little handsome baby boy. Right? And I thought, I'm not ready for this. And he was in the NICU for a week. Now, fast forward to my next child, my oldest daughter. My wife gets up in the morning. She's like, oh, I'm having some contractions. And I was like, okay. And she's like, well, can we go for a walk? And we'll see. Maybe we can speed this up. And I was like, sure. We start walking. We're going around and she is struggling. Like the contractions are getting bad. And I'm like, you know, babe, maybe we just go to the hospital and see. We get in the car. We go to the hospital. They run all the tests. And they're like, well, it could be in the next couple hours. It could be in the next couple days. Why don't you guys go home? And I said, why don't you go home? And we'll call you when we need you to come back. We'll stay right here. Clear us out a suite somewhere. We are not going anywhere. But then my wife said, no, the contractions, I'm not really having contractions anymore. It's fine. We can go home. And I was like, does anybody remember what happened last time? You sure? I don't think we want to go home. We go home. We get there. We start to have dinner. And I hear, uh-oh. And I go, what? She goes, I think my water broke. But I'm learning. So I was like, okay. What do you want to do? She goes, well, I want to get in the bath. And I was like, okay. Why? And she's like, well, I want to see if I'm not really having contractions. I just want to see. So she gets in the bath. Now I can't get her out. The contractions got so bad, I can't get her out. So finally, I'm like, just tell me when we're in between. She's like, okay. And I just lifted her out. We get her dressed, and we're headed to the hospital. Halfway there, she says, I think I have to push. And I said, I know at this point I can't say no. Hold it in. right? Like, I can't say that. I'm getting smarter. I also know that I can't say, yeah, go ahead, push. We're going 70 miles an hour down the highway. She's standing in the front seat. Like, no, I'm not delivering this baby while I drive. So I said, we'll be there in a minute. And I drove faster. I pull up to the emergency room. I ran inside. I stole a wheelchair. And they were yelling, sir, sir. And I said, my wife is having a baby in the front seat. You can either help or get out of my way. Those are your options. And an hour later, we had a little baby girl. But I was terrified from the moment she started having birth pains. I was ready. I was like, this is it. Let's go. We're done. I want to be there. I want to be ready. This is a problem also in the first century after the resurrection of Jesus. People thought he was going to come back at any moment. And they were just waiting. They weren't doing anything. And I think Jesus wants the disciples to know, look, there is a lot of storms coming in your life. There are going to be a ton of things happen. It's only the beginning. Stay strong. Don't get lazy. So he warns them about it. All right, let's go back to the text. Then you will be handed over to be persecuted and put to death. You will be hated by all nations because of me. At that time, many will turn away from the faith and betray and hate each other. And many false prophets will appear and deceive many people. Because of the increase in wickedness, the love of most will grow cold. But the one who stands firm till the end will be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations. And then the end will come. I want to stop again and I want to go through this partially because I want to talk about this increase of wickedness that causes the love of most to grow cold. For a long time, I don't know that I knew exactly what this meant. But looking around our world now, it's pretty easy. 10 years ago, if you would have told me that I would see the things I see today, I would have said no. And now they're commonplace. We don't even bat an eye at them. And what happens is people are treating us worse and worse. And the inclination is to respond the same way, right? When people are rude to you day after day after day after day after day, you want to say, you know what, from now on, you get what you deserve. I'm not helping. I'm not going to be kind back. And maybe they do deserve it, but so do I. And God says, that's not what I want. I long to gather them as my children under my wings for protection. That's what I want. You cannot respond the way they respond. You have to live differently so that your love doesn't grow cold. But make no mistake, a storm is coming and it will not be easy. But this is only the beginning. Okay, let's go back to the text. So when you see standing in the holy place the abomination that causes desolation, spoken of through the prophet Daniel, let the reader understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let no one who is on the housetop go down to take anything out of the house. Let no one who is in the field come back to get their cloak. How dreadful it will be in those days for pregnant women and nursing mothers. Pray that your flight will not take place in winter or on the Sabbath, for then there will be great distress, unequaled from the beginning of the world until now, and never to be equaled again. If those days had not been cut short, no one would survive. But for the sake of the elect, those days will be shortened. At that time, if anyone says to you, look, here is the Messiah, or there he is, do not believe it. For many false messiahs and false prophets will come and do great signs and wonders and deceive, if possible, even the elect. See, I have told you ahead of time. Now, Jesus wants to tell us ahead of time because it is going to be convincing. the things that come in their lifetime, the storm that they see is going to be so bad that it would possibly shake anyone's faith. I think it would shake mine. And so Jesus warns them ahead of time, don't let it shake you. Stand firm and you will be saved. This gospel has to go to the entire world. And then it says, so if anyone tells you, there he is out in the wilderness, don't go out. Or here he is in the inner room, do not believe it. For as lightning that comes from the east is visible even in the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Wherever there is a carcass, there the vultures will gather. Immediately after the distress of those days, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from the sky and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. Then will appear the sign of the Son of Man in the heavens. And then all the peoples of the world will mourn when they see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven in power and great glory. And he will send his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of the heavens to the other. Now learn this lesson from the fig tree. As soon as its twigs get tender and its leaves come out, you know that summer is near. Even so, when you see all these things, you know that it is near, right at the door. Truly, I tell you, this generation will not pass away until all these things have happened. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. Now, if this is just about the end times, we have to do something with that passage where it says, all this will happen before this generation passes away. How do we reconcile that? I'm going to try to do that for you today, right? Jesus answers the question, what's it going to look like when you come? Don't worry, you're going to notice. It's going to be like lightning. I don't know if it's actually going to be like lightning or if he's just using that as an example, but it's going to be something that everyone sees. But he's trying to tell them about something that's happening in their lifetime. I think it's possible that their question is about the end. But Jesus says, that's farther away. You need to focus on this because this is the storm you will see. Now, I want to tell you a little bit about prophecy. So often in prophecy in the Bible, we see somebody has a vision or they have a dream or God puts a burning coal in their mouth and then they have this supernatural thing that's happening. That is not how prophecy always works. Sometimes the prophet just comes and he says, God said this in his text and I'm just reminding you of it. He said, if you do this, this will happen. Kind of like if I said, if you jump off this building, you're going to get hurt. Don't do it. Right? I am not being prophetic necessarily in a supernatural sense. I just understand how gravity works. Right? I can also tell you, like, look, if you follow God, if you obey him, if you give your life to him, you will see the benefits of that relationship in your life, not only with him, but with the other relationships around you. You will find love and joy and hope. If you do not, if you choose to live your own way, those relationships are going to struggle. You'll put yourself before the other people and they will see it and they will limit the relationship they have with you. I don't have to do something supernatural to do that. I can just tell you what the text says. Now, it's possible that Jesus has some sort of supernatural vision from God and he's explaining that. I also think it's possible and maybe probable that Jesus is so brilliant and such a great observer of things around him that he's able to take things that are told or said in the text and bring them into life. For example, there's a time when Jesus, where the Pharisees comes and he looks at them and he says he knows what they're thinking. He's not psychic, right? It's kind of like with my kids. I can always tell when I tell them something they don't really want to do, right? Because they go, ugh. I don't have to know what they're thinking. Like, I know from their face, that eye roll, I know what they're thinking. Their subtitles are showing. It's not necessarily supernatural. I don't know what happens here with Jesus, but I want to give you some evidence to say that it's the brilliance of Jesus and his observation of what's happening that he's relying on here, possibly, okay? Just want to throw this out. Deuteronomy 28 says this, The Lord will bring a nation against you from far away, from the ends of the earth, that will swoop in like an eagle. A nation whose language you do not understand, a fierce-looking nation without respect for the old or pity for the young. Now, does anybody know what a Roman standard looks like? We're going to put up a picture of the Roman standard here. This is the Aquila. If you know one, it's probably this one. It's a big eagle that they would carry around on a staff in front of the army, and you would know Rome is coming. So we have this thing about an eagle. Now, do you know what a hen does when an eagle is flying overhead? She gathers her chicks under her wings to protect them and possibly sacrifice herself on their behalf. So I don't think it's a huge stretch that Jesus finds this text because he sees what's happening around him. He knows how brutal Rome can be. He knows that they haven't accepted him for who he came to be, and he knows that that can only lead to one thing. There will be war at some point between the Jews and the Romans, and Rome is going to win. They always do. But I'm going to be honest, I don't think it would matter because some of the worst kings in the history of Israel were their own kings. They are definitely oppressed by other people, but their own kings were some of the worst. But Jesus can look and he can see what's happening and he knows what's coming because of it. Now, this text in Deuteronomy goes on to tell us that when this eagle-like nation comes, they will take all their flocks, all their crops, all their wine, all their olive oil. They will destroy everything and leave it desolate. The cities that the Israelites have built, that the big walls around them that they're so proud of that will protect them, they are going to tear them all down. Not one stone will be left upon another. It is going to get so bad in the sieges of these towns that the Bible says this: you will eat the fruit of your own womb, the sons and daughters the Lord your God has given you. There will be a woman among you who eats her afterbirth and child in secret to try to survive. It is going to be something unequaled and never to be equaled again. This is from Deuteronomy 28. And I think Jesus sees this coming. And he's trying to warn them, because I'm going to be honest, I couldn't imagine that. If you would have said to me 20 years ago, Ben, can you imagine people doing this to survive? I would have said no. But I look around at the things we're willing to sacrifice in order to get what we want. Our friends, our family, our children. Now, we've got excuses. We make up reasons why. But the truth is, we want what we want and we will do anything to get it. Be careful. Jesus says, this is coming. Now, I'm going to offer that this happens in the disciples' lifetime. Because in 70 AD, now remember, we are about 2 days from Passover, right here when Jesus is talking to them, right? Passover is going to be in the next couple days here in the week that we're in. In 70 AD, within 2 days of Passover, the siege of Jerusalem starts. Now, Jerusalem is about 450 acres at the time. To give you a little bit of a thing, that's about a third of the U of I campus. U of I campus is a little over 1,500 acres. Jerusalem was 450 acres and around a population of 50,000. So imagine 50,000 people living on a third of the Idaho campus here in Moscow. Because all the other towns had been destroyed around Jerusalem and its Passover, Josephus, a Jewish historian who was part of the revolt and then is captured by Rome and is with the Roman army at this time, he writes about the siege of Jerusalem in 70 AD. He tells us there were 1.2 million people holed up inside of Jerusalem. Imagine getting up tomorrow and going out into Moscow and finding 1.2 million people running around. Now imagine it on 450 acres. They ran out of food, water. People were dying everywhere. and they were just leaving them because people tried burying some of the dead and they were dying while burying them. When the Roman soldiers broke in and went into some of the houses, they just found houses full of dead bodies and they didn't even plunder them. They plundered the temple, and but they didn't plunder the houses because they were so shocked by what they saw. This is the most brutal army in history. And get this. Josephus writes of a story of a woman named Mary of Beit Izav, or the house of the hyssop. A woman who took the child from her breast and roasted him and ate him in the siege of Jerusalem. It was so bad. Josephus tells us 1.1 million people died in this siege in Jerusalem, and 97,000 were led away as captives. It would have shaken my faith. And Jesus says, don't let it. I'm telling you ahead of time, this is going to be bad. Get out of Jerusalem when you see it coming. Don't stay, which is completely contrary to anything in ancient history, right? The whole reason we have cities with walls around them is so that they're safe. But Jesus says, don't rely on the things you can do. Trust me, get out. Run. And I don't know of anything that's as brutal in history, really, as this time. And here we have the disciples, right? A bunch of teenage kids who are, let's be honest, they're carrying swords because they think there's actually going to be a rebellion. They have no clue what Jesus is trying to do. They can't imagine that everything's going to come down. So they're trying to figure out from Jesus, what does this mean? What are you talking about? But Jesus needs them to know, and here's why. My friend RVL told me this story. He said, after the resurrection, Jesus went up into heaven, and he meets the angels. And the angels are like, Jesus, tell us what it was about. Tell us what it was like. What happened? And he said, you know, many people didn't listen. They were too proud of what they had. They wouldn't hear. They fell away. They beat me, and they crucified me and killed me. And the angels wept. And then Jesus said, but some did. Some heard the message and came back to God and found right relationship with him. Some found it. And the angels danced. Right? They did the post-hole digger. You guys know this one? Anyway, it's my favorite dance. And then the angels said, Jesus, is it finished? He goes, not yet. There's a lot to do. And knowing that he was there, they said, wait a minute, who then is in charge? And Jesus said, oh, I left it with my followers. They're in charge. And now, especially knowing what I know about the disciples, I'm sure the angels were pretty nervous about this. And they're like, I mean, are those really the best people, Jesus? They don't seem great to me. They're fishermen. They're little, you know. Is that really the best idea? And Jesus says, I'm sorry, that's the plan. There is no other. They are the plan to lead the story on. And you know what? You know what happened to the disciples? Six of them were crucified. At least one of them upside down. Two of them were beaten to death. One with a club and one with an axe. I'm not really sure how you beat somebody to death with an axe. I think it should be called something else, but that's not how it was recorded. One beheaded, one was stabbed to death with a sword, and one they threw spears at until he died. And one, only one, died of natural causes. And none of them lost the faith. None. Because they were the plan. And throughout the 2 millennia of atrocities, somebody else has been the plan and carried that message so that it could be here today. And now it is your turn to be the plan, to carry his story forward. You are the plan, and God believes in you. You may think, Ben, you don't know my life. I don't have to. I know God. I know there are storms in your life. There are more coming, but you are not alone. Jesus has left us the Holy Spirit. We can do anything. with the Spirit of God. But we also have each other. If you are in a storm, find somebody in here to walk through it with you, to tape up your windows, whatever you need. But you are the plan now. And if God is going to be able to gather everyone as a hen gathers his chicks, he needs you. And I believe in you too. Because just before that, or in a couple days, I guess in a couple days from chapter 24, Jesus is going to sit with the disciples at Passover before they betray him, before they abandon him. And they're all going to disappear. They were just fishermen. But they had a passion and they stayed strong and they trusted in Jesus, and we must do the same. On the night Jesus was betrayed, he took the bread and he broke it. And he said, "This is my body given for you. Remember that you are my plan. Go and tell my story so that I can gather all of my children." Let us remember. And after supper, he took the cup. And he said, "This is the blood of the new covenant. My blood given for you. When you do this, remember me. I came for you once. I'm coming back." Jesus has left you in charge, but he has not forgotten you. He will come again for us. Let us remember. Blessed are you, O Lord our God, King of the universe. Father God, it is a humbling thing to know that I'm part of your plan. God, let us stand strong until the end. Let us fight for our love for each other and for others, because it is what makes us most like you. God, storms are coming. All we ask is that you be there with us through them. And I know that you are faithful. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thanks for checking out this message from Real Life. You can find out more about us by visiting liferotp.com and connecting with us on Facebook and Instagram. Until next time, have a great week.